Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Corinne Carey, Senior Campaign Director of Compassion and Choices for New York and New Jersey. Corinne Carey has led the lobbying effort for many years, ultimately winning the battle to pass aid in dying legislation in New Jersey. However, the fight continues in New York over a bill known as the Medical Aid in Dying Act, first introduced in the New York State Legislature in 2016. We'll talk about that and much more, but first, welcome, Corinne Carey. I have to tell you, you are acting for a cause that I really do believe in, and I'm so happy to have you here with us today.
Well, thank you, Alan. You are not alone. The vast majority of New York voters agree with you, and an increasing number of lawmakers and statewide organizations do as well.
And exactly what is it?
Medical aid in dying is a time-tested process whereby a terminally ill, mentally capable adult can ask their physician for a prescription for medication that they can take at a time of their choosing or never, should their suffering become too great to bear. There are a dozen safeguards attached to legislation.
Too many safeguards?
Well, in some ways, there are states that are looking at those safeguards to see if they are acting more as barriers than safeguards, and we can talk about some of those.
Well, let's talk about them right now. What are some of the safeguards?
Well, one of the safeguards that New York doesn't have, but every other state has, is a residency requirement. So people can't go to different states. There was a fear early on that places would become destinations for medical aid.
So where are some of the great destinations for this process?
Well, you know, there aren't, Alan, because once someone has a six-month prognosis, it's exceedingly difficult to actually pick up and move and establish a new care team and undergo the evaluations, get a second physician, and then in some places deal with a waiting period. So there are no destination states for medical aid in dying, but there are 11 jurisdictions in this country that allow it. And our neighbors in Vermont and New Jersey are just two of those states.
Well, I have to say that my mother, long gone, used to walk around with a little one of those little medical vials, you know, that you get pills in, and she would shake it and she would say, "This is my nursing home."
Mm-hmm.
But of course, she didn't believe it. She didn't do it. She ended up in a nursing home because sometimes when you, by the time you get to the nursing home, you've forgotten what you were going to do.
Well, that's true.
But she certainly did believe in people's rights to end their lives and to change their conditions. Are you watching the polling on this?
Oh, absolutely. The polling has consistently shown that across every imaginable demographic and group, New York voters support this. The latest polling that was done by Marist in 2021, October of 2021. 59% of New Yorkers believe that terminally ill adults should have this right. 36% did not in that particular poll. But we've seen national polling year after year after year, and the numbers are growing. I think, you know, the COVID pandemic has a little bit to do with that. I think we've seen what a bad death truly looks like, a death where you're disconnected from family, the people that you love. You are suffering. You're afraid. Now, people have seen that up close in their own lives, but they've seen it on television and in the news. And I think it really highlights what a good death could be. And we see that people in New York are increasingly watching loved ones, relatives, friends take advantage of these laws in other states. And their families have stories that are of deaths that are not only gentle, but also beautiful.
Do you really mean good death or do you mean better death?
Well, I guess there's no such thing as a good death because we miss people. You know, there's a fear of the unknown, but certainly people can have a much better death. They can choreograph the end, the last chapter of their lives.
We're talking to Corinne Carey, and our question of the day is compassion and choices in the aid in dying movement. How did you get it done in New Jersey?
We had a number of really compelling storytellers there. We met with every single lawmaker. Now, you know, it took 7 years of a campaign. And so we're on year eight in New York. And I don't think that that's unusual for a piece of legislation that people deem controversial. But I'll tell you, Alan, I think lawmakers in New York, maybe New Yorkers in general, are more skeptical than lawmakers in other states. So, for example, we'd go into a legislative meeting in New Jersey and the lawmaker would ask us a question. We would answer it and they would say, "Great, I'm on board." That doesn't happen here in New York. You answer a question and they've got another one and another one and another one.
But there's always this issue of throwing grandma from the train. In other words, you make it too easy. Some people, skeptical people, would say, "You're trying to make it easy to kill people."
Well, I think that that is a fear among some lawmakers, but I'll tell you this. The bill itself is designed to put the dying person and the dying person alone in charge of this process. The initial request has to be made by the dying person, and at the end, the dying person has to be the one to self-ingest the medication. No one can request this for you, not a guardian, not a health proxy, not a doctor. So that is something that I think people are concerned about. But then when they learn what the bill actually does, those fears tend to dissipate. I'll also say that elder abuse, you know, is a horrible thing that we deal with in this state and everywhere in the country. But elder abuse happens now. There are family members that refuse to take a loved one to the doctor, that over-medicate, that under-medicate, and that do all kinds of other pernicious things outside of the realm of medical aid and dying. So it isn't medical aid and dying that provides a pathway to abuse. That abuse is happening and needs to be addressed now. Medical aid and dying is a structure, and no one would go into that structure with all of the safeguards and all of the protections just to do what they could do without it.
So who are the people who really stand in your way from getting this done, or the organizations? Is the Catholic Church, for example, on board?
No, the Catholic Church is not on board. The Catholic Church has never been on board with any of these bills across the country, and they never will be. This is, I think, a seminal issue for the New York State Catholic Conference. But I think even they recognize that it isn't going to be religious arguments that sway lawmakers to not take up and pass this bill. I think part of the issue here is that it's easier to do nothing than it is to do something. And frankly, this bill isn't a priority for anyone until it is. Mm-hmm. Until you or a loved one are facing down certain death with the only thing in the future being suffering.
So why do we need legislation? Why don't I just jump off the, if I want to do it, jump off the bridge?
Because suicide is terrible and has an incredibly awful effect on families. Research is showing that those effects are now intergenerational. Decades from a suicide, it has a tremendous tremendously negative impact.
Following along, right? Doing the same thing?
Well, not so much. Just that it creates a tension in families that doesn't go away. The impact on the community, on the EMS providers that may find someone. You know, we are very much in favor of suicide prevention efforts. And it may seem paradoxical, but medical aid in dying is actually a suicide prevention measure. During my 8 years of running this campaign, I have heard far too many stories of people taking their own lives. A 9/11 first responder who contracted cancer shot himself in the head at the entrance of a public park on Long Island. No EMS provider should have to deal with that. No family member, no friend should have to deal with that. He should have had the option to ask his doctor for medical aid in dying. But the worst stories I hear, Alan, are the people who try to take their own lives and are unsuccessful, and they end up on life support or they end up in a worse situation. And you may think with this raging opioid epidemic that we have that it's quite easy to take your life, but it's not.
Because
when you're on pain medication in high doses for a very long period of time, trying to overdose on pain medications is almost impossible. That's why it's really important that physicians are involved to take account of your body weight, your illness, what medications you've been on, and devise the right amount of medication that's going to bring about a peaceful death.
We are talking to Corinne Carey, who is the Senior Campaign Director of Compassion and Choices for the New York and New Jersey groups. My first job was teaching at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, and I often compare, the ethical standards, political attitudes of New York and New Jersey. Can you help me with that?
You know, all of the leaders in New Jersey were Catholic. And so there was, you know, there was a period of time when we felt pretty hopeless about New Jersey, particularly.
But some of them were pretty progressive Catholics, weren't they?
They are progressive. And in fact, once Governor Christie left office and Governor Phil Murphy came in, I think the legislature was more willing to pass this bill. And in fact, that's what they did. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was not easy. We had an intensive letter writing campaign. We showed up at the Capitol every time they were in session. We met with each of them individually. We had a digital campaign where we shared stories of New Jerseyans who either experienced the tragic and suffering death of a loved one or were themselves terminally ill. So it took a lot of effort in New Jersey. I just think it's taking a little bit more effort in New York.
This is an intensely personal question, but if faced with it, I'm sure you've been asked before, would you resort to taking your own life rather than waiting for things to take their course?
Well, I don't know, Alan. You know, I think about this a lot because, you know, I'm not a mom, but mothers know this intimately. They know that there are things that they can bear that they never thought that they could, right? And so we don't really know how we're going to feel when we're faced with a terminal illness. Hospice and palliative care has made tremendous advances. And so I would hope, as I think most people would, that those options would be enough. But I have seen far too many cases where hospice and palliative care is not enough. And so I know that for myself, I would want the option. And the option itself is palliative. Knowing that there's a door that you can open if you're suffering and there's nothing else that's alleviating that suffering is tremendously comforting. That's why we know that between a quarter and a third of all people who actually get the prescription in states that authorize it never end up using it. But their family members report that they felt a tremendous sense of peace just knowing that that option existed.
Well, interesting. That's very interesting. So doctors become very important in all of this because one way or the other, when these laws are passed, some doctor has to sign off somewhere.
That's right.
So does the Hippocratic Oath that doctors take support or reject the idea of medical aid in dying?
Well, here's the thing about the Hippocratic Oath. There is only one medical school in the whole country that has newly minted doctors take the Hippocratic Oath. But the point is, it's not really used anymore. But I will say that part of the Hippocratic Oath, and if you look at the history of it, there's all kinds of prohibitions against surgery that we don't clearly follow anymore. But one of them is to do no harm, right? And so this has provided justification for some doctors to say that that means that they can't participate in medical aid in dying. But most new doctors or doctors who've experienced delivering hospice and palliative care know that doing harm is actually refusing to provide or being unable to provide the help that someone needs to overcome suffering. So if someone's suffering and you're not doing anything, you're actively causing harm. And so the prohibition against causing harm works in that way as well.
So remind people who he was, but did Jack Kevorkian give the original Aid in Dying movement a bad name?
Well, it's a different process.
Tell us a little about him and then...
Dr. Jack Kevorkian, which many of your listeners may be familiar with, was a person who helped people die. They didn't need to be terminally ill necessarily. There were no safeguards attached. I think what has happened is there was a shift right around 2014 when a young woman named Brittany Menard shared her story with People magazine. And it was on the cover, her decision to die. And it was the most clicked on story in People magazine's history.
Lot about who was out there.
Yeah, maybe the demographics,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
But she was a beautiful 29-year-old woman who had just been married in a California vineyard. And she started having headaches. And she was diagnosed with brain cancer, the same brain cancer that took John McCain's life.
Mm-hmm.
And so naturally, the first thing that she did, as most of us would, is how do I beat this? So she underwent aggressive treatment, but instead of shrinking the tumor grew aggressively. And she was brave enough to ask the doctor, what is my death going to look like? And she didn't like what she heard. So she said, can you help me die when the time comes? And he said, no, this is illegal in California, where she lived at the time, but Oregon has it. And so she had the resources, the wherewithal. She was young and otherwise healthy enough. She had the support of her family, where she relocated to Oregon.
She
and she spent the rest of her life both checking off, you know, items on her bucket list, but also lending her voice to this campaign. And she became the face of it. And our movement grew by leaps and bounds. Younger people who heard about her story joined. And she persuaded California lawmakers, along with a lot of other advocates in that state, to pass the bill just a year after she died.
Yeah.
And now her husband, Dan Diaz, is working with us in New York and all over the country to bring her story and show what this process did for her and their family.
We are talking to Corinne Carey, who has led a lobbying effort for many years to do this, joining with so many other people for Compassion and Choices in New York and New Jersey. So on your website, compassionandchoices.org, you have separated issues surrounding aid in dying into four areas: dementia and end-of-life care, healthcare equity at the end of life, medical aid in dying, and voluntarily stop eating and drinking. Can you explain those to us? Because I know that when I discuss this with my very brilliant wife, she often talks about this business about stopping eating.
Yeah. So Compassion and Choices is a national nonprofit organization that works on improving end-of-life care in a larger sense. We don't just do medical aid and dying work. And so you're right. We actually do. We help people with their advanced care planning. We help them plan in the event of a dementia or Alzheimer's diagnosis. There are quite a few really powerful tools that your listeners can access on our website that help them think through the kind of care that they might want should they get a dementia diagnosis. But voluntarily stopping eating and drinking is one of the very limited options that New Yorkers have now when they're suffering from a terminal illness and death is imminent and it's not coming quickly enough and suffering becomes unbearable. And so people can, with the aid of a doctor and with good palliative medicine and good support from their family, voluntarily stop eating and drinking. Based on many, many, many accounts, the body begins to shut down and people die within a matter of days. Sometimes it takes weeks, though, and it is a very difficult process for family members to watch. So I think what I would say about that is that it's a legally available option for everyone. It has provided a tremendous sense of peace to some people, but for others, it's not a good option, and they need something more, and that's when medical aid in dying comes into play.
Do you have a website that people can go to?
Yes, it's compassionandchoices.org. And we have a search function on that website. People can look at the advanced care planning tools, the dementia tool, and the information about our campaign.
That's wonderful. As you know, this might be a good or not good time to say as the interviewer that I am desperately in favor of what you're doing, and I think it's so wonderful. So I know that former Governor Andrew Cuomo supported it, medical aid in dying, but what about current Governor Kathy Hochul?
I don't know yet. We have done a tremendous amount of work to educate her staff, to provide her with all of the necessary information that she needs to make a decision. And I have to say, Alan, I'm hopeful because Kathy Hochul is a good person. I think she makes really smart decisions. I've met her before. But frankly, I know she was in a tough election cycle. So we've asked her to come out in support of this, mm-hmm. and she hasn't. And I understand that, because once you come out in support of a bill like this, you could become a target for the opposition, right?
Yes.
But the election is over.
Sure.
It's time for her to lead. It's time for all of these lawmakers who have been on the fence or holding their cards close to their chest to come out in support. That's what we need from our leaders, is to take bold stands on things that are the right thing to do. And she needs to do that now. She can do that now. She's got the breathing room, I think, after this election to take the right stand. And once she does that, or once any of the legislative leaders do that, I think we'll start to see a domino effect of more people coming on board.
So could you remind us of what the polling is showing in terms of New Yorkers?
Yeah. The latest polling was done by Marist in October of 2021, and it showed that 59% of New Yorker voters support this. I think we need a new poll, frankly, and I'm hoping that there's a pollster or two listening to your radio show and think it's time for a new poll, because we've seen numbers as high as 70% in some of the statewide polling. But here's an interesting thing that I'll tell you. We bring those numbers into lawmakers, and they look at us and they say, well, that might be true of the rest of the state, but not my district. And so we challenge them. Put a question in your next newsletter. Put a question on your website. Every time we've done that, no matter what district it is, a rural district, a very religious district, the numbers come back astoundingly high, in some cases 80%.
Wow.
And these aren't just run-of-the-mill voters. These are people that actually follow their elected official. So these are the people that they should be paying attention to the most.
So what about Congress? What about a federal law as opposed to a state law?
Yeah, this is a state issue, Alan. I think many people have tried to do things at the federal level. They've tried to do things in the courts. But the courts have said that this is an issue for the state legislatures. And the one thing that the federal government can do, and it has done, is prohibit any funding from flowing to medical aid in dying. So they can do something that's negative to impact end-of-life choices, but they can't actually authorize it for the states because the states have police power.
Well, obviously you're a lobbyist and a good lobbyist, but when you go to visit people who are opposed, do they ever really get angry at you?
Sometimes, but I find that the vast majority of people who think that they're opposed, if they just spend 3 to 5 minutes with me, they walk away understanding that while they personally may remain opposed, they don't want to stand in the way of other people who are suffering. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about this bill, about what it is, who it's for, and what it would actually authorize. And I think if people take the time to dig into the issue a little bit, they'll find that they're not opposed to other people who are suffering having this option.
We are talking to Corinne Carey. She is talking to us about aid in dying. I confess to you that I'm very much in favor of what she is talking about. And so the question then would be, what's your sense of this session that we're facing in New York right now?
Well, I am super hopeful, and I'll tell you why. Between Election Day and the end of the year, we commenced a winter tour of New York State. We went to about 25 different cities from the North Country to Western New York, Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, Oneonta, the Hudson Valley, and we ended the tour in New York City on December 14th. We held community conversations. We held workshops on advanced care planning. We held press conferences in each of those regions. And I can tell you that we got a tremendous amount of press, and we're seeing that now translate into lawmakers who are newly elected or returning to Albany saying, yes, I will put my name on that bill as a co-sponsor.
So do you have a legislative hero, someone who is helping you from within the legislature?
I feel so grateful that we have a number of legislative heroes. Senator Brad Hoyleman has been an incredible advocate. He's met with dying constituents. Assemblymember Amy Paulin, who just became the Health Committee chair, has been just an incredible advocate. You know her. She's tenacious.
Yeah. What happened to Richard Gottfried, who was running the Health Committee all those years?
He was a champion as well.
Yes.
He was the second bill sponsor, and he did a great job as a spokesperson for this issue. But Amy Paulin is, she doesn't let issues go very lightly. So we have a tremendous champion in her. But then we've also got some healthcare providers, right? We've got Farrah Souffrant Forrest, who's a nurse. Karinas Reyes, who's a nurse and also an assembly member. We've got Sarah Clark, who's a Anna Kellis. These are members of the legislature who are deeply committed to this issue. Senator Gustavo Rivera was our second bill sponsor. He's the chair of the Senate Health Committee. So I feel like we do not lack for legislative champions.
We only have a minute, but I wanted to ask you, what should people who are listening to you and agree with you, what should they do?
Well, I think the first thing they should do is go to our website and take immediate action. There are a number of buttons that you can click to immediately send an email to your lawmaker.
And that website is?
CompassionandChoices.org, and you can look for the section in your state and find us in New York. You can also find us on Facebook and take action directly from Facebook. And what I would say is if you encounter lawmakers at a farmer's market or at an event, or if you go on their website, if you know who represents you in the Assembly or the Senate, reach out to them. A phone call is worth so much at this point.
Absolutely.
A handwritten letter, a phone call. The automated email messages are great, but if you make a direct connection with your elected official, that means more than anything.
You are so right about a handwritten letter. But right now we're out of time. Our guest has been Corinne Carey, Senior Campaign Director of Compassion and Choices for New York. That's Senior Campaign Director of Compassion and Choices for New York and New Jersey. Corinne, thank you so much for joining us. I have to say, I couldn't agree with you more. I really appreciate your work here.
Well, thanks, Alan, and thanks for having me on your show.